Welkom bij de Nieuwe Wereld. Mijn naam is Marlies Dekkers en mijn gast vandaag is Tom Nelson. Welcome. Because you do it in English, because that's your language.
That's my only language, yes. Yeah, thanks for having me on here. I'm really looking forward to this. Yeah,
you are here because the premiere was yesterday evening, isn't it?
Yes, there was a premiere here in the Netherlands, and it was really successful yesterday. Over 500 people were here to see this new movie, and it was a very fun evening. I'm looking forward to this whole rollout of the movie.
Yeah, and the movie, we just had here Maurice de Hond, and he was also by the premiere, and he was also very enthusiastic. The movie is Climate, the movie, The Cold Truth. That's a challenging, isn't it?
Yeah. So this is Martin Durkin. I wanted to do a remake kind of the Great Global Warming Swindle, which came out in 2007. And that one held up really well. He's a very good filmmaker. And he spent about a year making this one. And I think a lot of people are going to enjoy seeing it. I think it's going to change the climate debate, I think.
Yeah, let's hope, because I think it's necessary that we get a little bit more diverse way of looking at. Mm-hmm. You're the producer?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it's your money?
It's private money.
Yes. Yeah,
it's private money.
You find it that's important?
Yeah. Yeah, it's very important. And it didn't really cost that much to make this movie either, because there were a lot of volunteers that volunteered their time to be in the movie and to even work on the movie. And then Martin uses a lot of stock footage of like ancient Romans and people in the medieval warm period, etc. So yeah, it didn't cost that much.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's a very impressive list of people who speak in. I was really impressed. So, for example, John Clauser, I hope I said the names well.
John Clauser,
He's a Nobel Prize winner in physics.
Yes.
Will Hepper from Princeton. Stephen Conin. This is his great book, I think.
Excellent book,
Everybody has to read this one.
We call it Unsettled in English.
Yeah, Unsettled. Yeah, in Dutch it's onbeslist.
Okay.
But it means the same. Mm-hmm. So Roy Spencer, Tony Hiller, it's impressive list.
Yeah.
And I think the peoples are the most important, what they have to say.
Yeah. These are people that have dug into this data very carefully for many years. And what they've done consistently, if you dig into the data, there's absolutely no climate crisis and the weather is not getting worse and CO2 isn't the climate control knob. Just about everything that they're telling you is a lie. And anything alarming they're telling you, everything is a lie. There's nothing alarming at all happening with the weather or the climate. Nothing.
Yeah, you just said, I think perhaps you used three sentences, but that is pretty shocking because we are... Yeah, is it a hoax or how do you call it then?
Well, yeah, Will Hepper talks about that, whether it's a hoax or a scam in the movie. And I think he says, I can live with hoax, but a scam is a better word. But it is very interesting. I think there's a psychological component to it that I think a lot of the people that are pushing this on us, they sincerely believe it. So groupthink is a big part of it. So it's not like everybody who tells you there's a climate crisis, they're trying to put one over on you and they know that there isn't one. I think a lot of people just think that the experts say there's a crisis, so there must be one. So I think, again, groupthink is maybe the biggest part of this whole thing.
Yeah, and what do you think about, I don't know if it's the right English word, but you have something like pollution in the way that you do plastic in the sea or, you know, that... And CO2.
Right.
There's also something what is in the mixer, and everything is CO2.
Yeah, there's a guy named Dave Collum that was on my podcast, and he talks about how people smuggle other things into the climate debate, like real pollution. Like if you don't think that CO2 is pollution, then you think that mercury pollution is a good thing or something.
Yeah. But exactly that. Yeah, that's a good example.
Yeah, we need to throw that out. So this whole idea that CO2 that you and I are breathing out is pollution, it's absolutely not pollution. And more CO2 is better for life on Earth. All right, now, there's maybe 425 parts per million of CO2 in the air outside here. And when we're exhaling 40,000 ppm CO2, 100 times what's outside. But CO2 is plant food, it doesn't cause bad weather, and it's just not pollution. So this whole idea that we need to change our lifestyles and destroy our electric grids to fight CO2 is just completely bonkers. I can't believe this thing has lasted as long as it has.
But you have a podcast, perhaps good
I do.
To mention it.
I do have a podcast. It started in July of 22, and I've done 200 episodes. And I've interviewed a lot of people that are in the movie. I've interviewed Will Happer a couple of times and Willie Soon, and tons of people in the movie have also been on my podcast. And that is one thing that if you see that you're interested in Will Happer and what he's got to say in the movie, then you can hear him on my podcast where he talks at great length about all this stuff. So you can really dig into any individual part of it if on my podcast or elsewhere.
And learn. But exactly what you said. So, for example, I am a designer, I have my own company. You don't know that. But my company is B Corp, because I'm really, honestly, very take care of the earth. But that's something else.
Yes. Yeah.
Then that's CO2.
Yeah, they're completely separate things.
Yes.
Yeah, there's this whole idea that people like me want to destroy the earth because we don't want to fight CO2. No, I want the earth to be as green as possible for my kids. I don't hate my kids. But this whole idea of fighting CO2, it just doesn't make any sense. And there's so many destructive things that come from that, making stupid energy decisions because you're trying to fight this thing that's not even a pollutant. So I'm totally happy to fight real pollution and to do things that are friendly to wildlife. I'm all in favor of that. And all the people in the movie, they're in favor of making sure there's plenty of wildlife and all that. They're not evil people. We shouldn't demonize these people. Yeah.
Exactly that. Yeah. And I'm on the same page, but that's also in the movie that you become almost scared to say that you're against CO2 because it looks like, or the frame is, that you then against wildlife or that you against a healthy earth or beautiful blue water, but it's not pollution, but that is something different.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a huge dynamic here that I'm finding. All sorts of people will tell me privately, I know that there's no problem with the weather, but I can't speak out at all because my family will be mad at me or I'm going to lose my job. I've had lots of people turn down an appearance on my podcast because they say, I can't come out and say this stuff because I might lose my employment or lose my funding. That's a huge, huge problem. And Will Happer says that in the movie, that now that he's older and he doesn't have to worry about losing his job, then he speaks out. And that's a huge reason why so many people in the movie are older, because they don't have anything to lose. Yeah, now they can speak out. But Happer says, if I was 30, I mean, I wouldn't speak out as a younger person because there's so many penalties for speaking out. So I think we really need to reverse that. And I think we are going to reverse it. As more people speak out, then there's safety in numbers. And I think this thing could collapse pretty quickly when more people speak out and it's not the verboten to go ahead and say something that's true about carbon dioxide.
Yeah. Yeah. But let me do first a proper introduction or who you are.
Yeah, I'm Tom Nelson. I am from Minnesota. And I started out as a blogger. I blogged about this ivory-billed woodpecker controversy back in the old days in 2005.
It was woodpecker?
It was a very interesting controversy. Super interesting. You didn't hear about it.
Yeah. No, perhaps not everybody, so explain.
Yeah, it was so interesting. So there was this rediscovery of this huge bird called an ivory-billed woodpecker. It was the Lord God bird in 2005. And it was a huge deal. It was announced on public radio in the United States. And people got so excited about the rediscovery of this extinct bird that they drove their cars off the road and they would start crying and stuff because it was such a big deal. And there was a peer-reviewed paper that had 17 authors on it. And it was signed off, I think it was in Science magazine. Everybody agreed this thing had happened. And it was a complete crock. It totally didn't happen. And one of the major pieces of evidence they had for this rediscovery was a 6-pixel ivory bill, 6 pixels. So it had 2 blacks, 2 whites, and 2 more blacks. And that was supposed to be a picture of an extinct bird. And like I said at the time, you could take a picture anywhere around here and blow it up and you could find this little 6-pixel thing and think, hey, I found an ivory bill in this room. It's completely crazy. That's how crazy this thing was. It took about a year. I worked on my blog and I I tore apart the evidence bit by bit. It took about a year for this thing to kind of go away. But after about a year, some guy said, you know, the ridiculous evidence in this case, it's just like the global warming thing. Here's why the whole global warming thing, if you look at the evidence in that, it's the same thing. There's nothing that backs it up if you look at it yourself. So I looked at it myself, and within the first day, I realized that this global warming thing, experts say there's a problem.
Go back to
but
the
there's not. Yeah.
You talk so
I'm sorry. Wait, I'm so excited about it. Yeah.
But so there was a woodpecker.
There was a woodpecker. There used to be a woodpecker.
There used to be a woodpecker.
Yep. Yep.
And then there was a kind of also a story, and everybody thought, okay, there's a woodpecker. And they go to search to it. But it was not true.
Yeah. There was this woodpecker. It actually lived in the U.S. until maybe the 1930s, 1940s, and then it went extinct. And then for many years, a lot of people were out looking for it, hoping to find one more. Yeah, they were looking everywhere, and there were stories that they had found it, and they never did. But it was they wrote articles about it. It was a big deal that you search for. It's like searching for Bigfoot or something. It's a lot like that.
But it's a kind of so sweet and romantic.
I read about it.
But now it's so ugly. You know, it's the same way of rethinking, or how do you say that? Or it's
there were so many
imagination.
So many similarities between the two stories. A lot of similarities. So people, once they announced that they had rediscovered this bird, a lot of other people went into the same woods and they believed that someone else had seen it. So these people would go in there and they'd see something fly by and they'd say, "Ah, I saw it." A lot of people thought that they saw it, and it was the same groupthink type of thing.
But we as human beings are, you know, we can do group thinking.
Absolutely.
But this example is so sweet and romantic.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's not sinister.
Do it in the old days like this.
Yeah, that was the good old days.
that was the good old days.
This is not the good old days.
But we believe in Santa Claus and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But now we do the same, but then on really big stuff with a lot of money and destroying things.
Yeah, a huge amount of money at stake now and a huge amount of negative effects for real working people. I think it's kind of a war on working people because they want to restrict our lifestyles and they want to not let us drive an internal combustion car and stop us from flying to places we want to go. And we can't eat meat anymore and we have to eat bugs and the list goes on forever of how they can micromanage us. So there's a lot of evil actually going on here.
Yeah, but Tom, I live in the Netherlands. You live in another...
In Minnesota,
Minnesota, far away from each other.
Yes,
And we hear the same thing. So, the whole list, what you said.
Yeah.
So, that's also a little bit scary if you do it in one city and there is a kind of dreamy way of thinking about the woodpeckers.
Yes,
But if you now, it's so global we all think that this is the truth.
Yeah, it's a global thing and it's being pushed down on top of us. And as I often say, any one of us, if we were to just go outside, we don't see any evidence of a climate crisis. It's just the same weather. It's not any better or worse than it was of 100 years ago or 1,000 years ago. And the only reason that people believe in it is they think the experts have proven that there's a climate crisis. It's pretty amazing. Yeah,
but there are a lot of graphs in... I had to smile a bit, so I thought, okay, you smash them back with graphs.
Yes,
because they smash us with a lot of graphs.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of graphs in it, and for examples, how many hurricanes are there the last 300 years, and all graphs go in the direction it's not really, there's not really something big going on. It's even more in the low period of everything. If you see the drought or the hurricanes or the weather changes, it's...
Yeah, that's one thing I like about this debate is that just an ordinary person, you can go down each individual rabbit hole or check each individual thing once at a time. You can pick out droughts. And as an ordinary person, you can look up data yourself and see, are the droughts getting worse? And they're not. If you look anywhere, they're not getting worse. It fluctuates up and down. And in a given area, you might have droughts for 10 years and then no drought for 20 or whatever. It fluctuates. But if you look at the data over the long term, there aren't any trends. Sometimes it's worse and sometimes it's not. It's not CO2 that's causing it. Something else is, because if it was CO2 that's causing it, we would see the graphs just go up and to the right, and they're not doing that.
Yeah, but I think people have just their life and don't have time to go to look what is the global drought or 350 years summer versus winter. You just think, I go to play with my children or I go to work.
Yep.
So we give that to the journalist, to the press, from please, you have to check that. That's your job. And tell us the truth.
But they're not. I'm not seeing any evidence, hardly, in the mainstream of journalists actually checking it. It seems like they're kind of rubber stamping things that
but
they're hearing.
What is happening then there? You are so deep in the rabbit hole. So that this is so important.
Yeah.
So why are mainstream, also everywhere in the West, don't do the same as you do in this movie?
Yeah, I can't really get in people's heads for sure to figure out what's going on in their head. But I think a lot of journalists, mainstream journalists, they went into climate journalism because they already believed. I do think that's a big part of it. They were believers already, and then they're just not checking that belief. They think they're right. They're pretty sure they're right. And it's a lot of work to go check it themselves. I don't see hardly any of them checking anything alarming themselves. I hardly ever see them say, okay, this claim doesn't make any sense because look at this data. I spent 5 minutes looking up the data and it doesn't make any sense. I'm not seeing that. But I am seeing a number of other journalists on maybe a little less mainstream that are doing that. One is Katie Spence from the Epoch Times. She's doing a fabulous job. She's contacting scientists and looking at the data and she's putting up graphs and stuff. And she's just one example. So there are journalists that are doing real journalism still. And I think there's more of them now than there were 5 years ago.
Okay, but we went by the woodpecker. So your story.
Okay.
So, okay, after the woodpecker story.
After the woodpecker, what happened to me after that? Oh, then I started blogging about climate. After this guy sent me this one email, then I was on Blogspot, and I spent years on Blogspot, and I just read everything I could. I had Google searches going up, and I read everything I could about climate, and I just put up little snippets of articles. I'd pick out interesting things, and just that's what I did, is I wanted people to come to my blog and find out what's happening in the climate debate. I spent a lot of time doing that, and then when Twitter got bigger, I moved over to Twitter, and eventually, in July of 22, I became a podcaster, and since then, I've spent a lot of time just interviewing as many people as I can, and I try to interview people on both sides of the debate. I have invited tons of people up from the other side of the debate, and almost all of them ignore me. Almost none of them will come on my podcast, but I'm game to have anyone come on and just let's talk about it. It is controversial. And one thing is, nobody understands really what's going on with the climate with natural variability because it's so incredibly complicated. The sun's doing stuff and volcanoes, and it's not like we know what's going to happen next. We don't because it's complicated.
No, let's talk about that was also a very interesting part, the sun part. Because in the movie, you explain very well, or you both, or your who work on the movie, all the graphs. And if you look to 30 years, that's different if you look to 350 years, and it's different if you look to 3 million years. Mm-hmm. But then all pointed to us, human being, we are the one who are doing all the bad stuff. But then you bring in the sun.
Right, yeah.
Perhaps the sun also have his own will.
Yeah, I mean, Willie Soon talks about in there that the IPCC wants to just imagine that the sun is not a factor. And he says, from his view, it's 100% the sun and 0% CO2 that's causing the fluctuations. So yeah, the sun has a lot of different ways that it can affect our climate. And
can you learn us a bit? Learn us a bit, what can the sun, because for people it's just, the sun is the sun.
Yeah, it's very complicated, but there's a way that the sun can influence the cosmic rays that are coming down to the Earth, and that can change the cloudiness. And just a little change of cloudiness can have a huge effect on the climate of the Earth, because clouds are so important to climate and weather. So it's not like a little fluctuation in the sun can make a big difference, actually, on Earth. And there's solar flares. There's some evidence that the changes in solar flares correlate with changes to weather on Earth. But again, it's so complicated on so many different timescales. The Earth is moving through the spiral arms of the galaxy. You may have seen that in the movie. That has an effect on very long timescales. But I've had a lot of people on my podcast that have talked about different effects on different timescales. And some things have an effect on just the almost a daily time scale, and sometimes it's century, and it goes up and up and up. As you look through the actual data, you can see all sorts of different cycles that are going on. There's maybe a 180-year cycle, and there might be 10 or more different cycles on different time scales. And then if they're lining up, if they all line up in one way, you might get a very, very warm period, and vice versa for a cold period. But it's just incredibly complicated, and it's not like even these cycles stay exactly predictable, because even something might happen to disrupt those cycles. So I don't know if we're ever going to understand what's going on.
It's so complicated. It's so complicated. Yeah. And what helped by me was reading about the chaos theory. Is that the right English word?
Say it again.
Chaos theory?
Chaos? Yeah.
Because they also said if there is a butterfly doing here, can be a tornado by you.
Absolutely. That's not funny. That's a serious thing.
Yeah, that's a serious thing.
But Christopher Monckton, who is one guy in this debate, he says that even if we understood all these variables that affect climate, we still don't know the initial state of each variable, because we have to know that. We have to know exactly what is the state of all these things that can change. And we don't even know that. We can't really measure the initial state of everything. So sometimes I say it's hard, even on a roulette wheel, if you put the ball in there and you try to model it, and where's it going to land? Even that little problem there is really hard to model and figure out where it's going to land. And then the Earth's climate, what's going on with all the planets and volcanoes and ocean currents, is so many orders of magnitude more complicated than that. That's the whole idea of trying to write a Fortran program that's going to figure this out and give you the right answer. It's not going to happen. Yeah.
In the Netherlands, it's a kind of part of the culture.
Yeah.
The weatherman.
Oh.
Yeah, what is the weather? Because they can't predict.
They can't predict the weather. It's because it's complicated. Yeah.
I think it's the same by you. Yeah, it's complicated.
Yes, but same thing.
This complicated. This is exactly the point, I think.
Yeah, it is.
That we think as human being that, okay, it's so complicated, and all the miners.
Yeah.
Make major
influence. Yeah.
And we don't like that, because we always said, take out the miners, because then we know how to predict things.
Yeah.
But in this complicated thing like CO2, you have to take all the miners.
Yeah. But this whole idea that this one little factor out of all these factors, this one little one that we're going to change everything, it's the most important thing ever, is completely crazy. I think there was a guy named Tim Ball, who was a great climate skeptic in the past, that he's passed away now. He was saying like the importance of CO2 to the climate might be just like the tightness of one lug nut, a little change in the tightness on the wheel of your car. It's a little tiny thing. It's not like the wheel's going to fall off or anything. It's just a little thing on the side. It's a little factor, but not that much. Yeah.
That was also in the movie, I forgot his name, that's not so good for me, but the one from Greenpeace.
Yeah, Patrick Moore with that book there, yeah. fake Invisible Catastrophes in my language, yeah. It's a great book.
It's a great book, but also interesting, because he was in the start of the movement.
Yeah, co-founder of Greenpeace.
Why is he still, you know, on the case? And said he was the one who's most, this is a lie, it's not true.
Yes. That's pretty powerful stuff, because he used to be in Greenpeace. It's not like he hates the planet or anything. But as I understood it, he was in Greenpeace until they kind of went crazy, and then he got out of there. But he is super duper knowledgeable, and he's written this excellent book. And I've heard him speak in person. He just knows a lot about Earth's climate. But of course, he doesn't understand it completely. But he understands it enough to know that CO2 is not the climate control knob. But I have one more story about him, is that another guy in the movie you may have seen is Jasper Muchoku.
Mm-hmm.
He's a farmer from Kenya. And I really like that guy. He works hard. He's farming with a hoe for long periods of time. And then he's got his own Substack. He's a very brilliant guy in terms of talking about the climate. But anyway, this Jasper guy, he was a Greenpeace type about 4 years ago himself. And then he read that book from Patrick Moore. And that opened his eyes, and he started questioning the whole thing. And very quickly, he started learning more about it, and he switched to the skeptic side, because there's so many great arguments made in there. So I think tons of people can be like Jasper and may have believed it or been a Greenpeace type, but once you learn more, you are not going to follow this craziness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Kind of the second part of the movie is more follow the money.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, there is a there's so much money involved here. You hear numbers like $40 trillion US, et cetera. That's so much money is spent on climate science, for just on climate science, and that's just a small part of the whole thing. We're talking about, again, getting rid of real cars, internal combustion cars, and maybe California, that everyone has to drive an electric car somehow to fight CO2. And so many of these decisions are crazy, these big money decisions, because like in California, right when they announced that they were going to go to all electric cars, right that same week they said, if you have an electric car, we don't want you to be plugging it in because we don't have enough power in the system.
Yeah, we are in the Netherlands almost also there. So first everybody has to go electric, and then they said, we don't have enough.
Yeah, so it's just amazing that there needs to be more adults in the room and say, okay, we got to figure this out. We can't just, we can't just announce it's going to happen and it's going to happen. We have to obey the laws of reality and physics. And so many of these solutions, they're not going to have any effect on climate and weather at all anyway. That's what I'm saying. If we spend this $40 trillion, we do anything we want, we never eat meat again, all the stuff, we all live in a cave, it still is not going to have any measurable weather or climate benefit ever. That's what I would say. It's not enough to measure. Yeah.
Am I naive? Uh-huh. Because I think if you do the follow the money, for example, the car industry.
Yeah.
For example, Tesla, Elon Musk. But he's not the one who takes the decisions. We have to do all electric cars.
Yeah.
So that people earn money to it, but it looks like there are different areas.
Yeah, it's coming down from bureaucracy. There's all these perverse incentives to do things that don't make any sense, like big incentives to get people to go into Teslas or electric cars. I've been hearing about those just this week, where there's all these different, in different countries, there's big incentives to, if you drive a Tesla per month, your cost, if you have a company car and you drive a Tesla, your tax will be like 1/30th of it.
That was the same here.
I just heard about this in the UK. Yeah, same here.
It was here.
So huge incentive.
Yeah.
So there's all these crazy incentives. And of course, people, even if they don't believe in the climate scam at all, and they're looking at these two choices, they have to make the one that, it's a factor of 30 for them, they're going to drive a Tesla, even if they don't believe in global warming at all.
No, the government.
Yeah.
They don't get the money from that. It's just, I think they do that because they believe really that this is good for the earth and for the people.
Yeah.
Or not. I think they really believe it.
I think they really believe it. I don't know how it got in their head, or I don't know exactly how policy is formed, or who exactly decides all these incentives. Somehow, I agree. I think most of the bureaucrats have not dug into this at all. So they've just said, okay, yeah, we need to do the best thing for our grandchildren. I guess it's more of a group thing again, that the best thing for our grandchildren is these huge incentives, because if we let people drive gas-powered cars, that's it. Civilization is going to end. So I don't know how we can fix this, but I think just if more and more voters become even a little more fluent on this stuff, I think that can help a ton. Once the politicians realize the voters are not going to stand for this, then it's going to crumble.
How far is that in the U.S.?
How far away is that?
Yeah.
I think it's close. I think it is. Overall, I think there's a huge amount of awakening happening in the last few years. I've talked to a lot of people about that there's tons of people maybe 4 or 5 years ago, including Jusper that I mentioned, that they just kind of believed experts on everything, that you don't have time to look into everything. If doctors tell you to do this certain thing, then you should do it. But during the COVID thing, I think a lot of people realized the experts may not have your best interests at heart, and maybe it's best to check into things for yourself. And I think enormous amounts of people are saying, okay, what else are they lying to us about? And the answer is a lot of things that they're lying to us about. And I'm really noticing that myself as I listen to podcasts from doctors who've been talking about COVID. A lot of them are saying, what else are they lying to us about? And they're starting to talk about climate change. I was just on a podcast from Dr. Ahmed Malik, and he followed that route himself. Now he's a good climate skeptic. He's checked into it, and he wasn't even looking into the issue a few years ago. A lot of people are following that path.
Yeah, but there is also, on the other side, also a discussion now in the Netherlands, that if you are a doctor and you said climate change don't have an effect on your patient's health, then you can get a penalty or something.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's all these crazy things that are happening still.
The crazy things. That's the world where we are living.
Yeah, huh? It's a crazy world, but I think it's not going to stay crazy. I don't think it is. I don't think it can. People
You're
are
optimistic.
Waking. I am optimistic. I'm absolutely optimistic that it's not going to stay this way. It's way too crazy. And
But how have we come so far?
Yeah.
Because in your movie you show that how much money is involved at the end.
Uh-huh.
Also, if you are in the university, if you do an study about,
yeah, uh-huh,
and you have climate in it,
yes, yeah,
change, so,
yeah,
towards, yeah, climate change,
yeah, mm-hmm,
then you get money.
Yeah,
and it was the same with COVID. If you do with COVID, then also you get a lot of money. So it's, but you know, they're kind of opportunistic. We call that in the Netherlands.
Yes.
Who think, okay, I can earn money on it. So
yeah, yeah,
good for me. But the government, they make all the decisions.
They do, yeah.
From this is good, this is wrong, this is, and then all the money flows to that side.
Yeah, but I think all of these hysterias in history have eventually crumbled. Like I was just thinking about the tulip hysteria here that happened in the old days.
Yeah,
that got crazy.
For the younger people, please explain.
Well, you know it way better than I do. But there was this hysteria where for some reason everybody kept buying tulip bulbs. And there was this bubble in tulip bulbs. I believe you could sell one tulip bulb for an enormous amount. What would be couple of oxen and a cart or whatever, or more than that. It just got completely crazy that one tulip bulb was that valuable. But then the whole thing popped and sanity came back. And it's not like that thing lasted for 500 years. It lasted for a while and then it went away. There was a thing that people talk about in the climate debate where during the Little Ice Age, it was really cold and the crops were failing. And there was hysteria there about what are we going to do? What caused this these crops to fail? They said, oh, it's witches. That even the elite people back then, even college educated people thought it was witches that caused bad weather. So they killed a lot of people. Some people say they killed 50,000 people back then over the course of time to prevent bad weather and make the crops get better. And it worked. The bad weather went away and the crops got better. But of course, it was just a complete crock. The witches, there weren't any witches and they had nothing to do with the weather. But I'm just saying that there's a lot of hysteria. They come and go. This is a hysteria we're having now. This one's going to go too. And why not now? I think it is going to go. I think it's going to crumble.
Soon. Yeah, and then the title, the tongue-in-cheek, The Cold Truth.
Yeah.
It's the movie also explained that the current ice age, the glacial maxima, the glacial minima. Explain.
Okay. Yeah, Patrick Moore explains that very well, that we are currently in an ice age right now. The people...
It's new for a lot of people.
Yeah, we are currently in an ice age. We have ice at both poles. And for most of the last 500 million years, we didn't have ice at the poles. So naturally, for most of that time, it was much warmer than it is now. And for millions of years, if you start back, I think 3 million years ago, it's much cooler now than it was then. So it's completely crazy to think, oh no, the Earth is way too hot and we're all going to die when we are currently in an ice age. It's a little bit warmer than it was in 1850. But I think Will Happer says, if you think that's a big problem, what are you smoking? He says that in the movie as well. So it's just a hysteria over just nothing. And another major point is that humans do way better in warm weather than in cold weather. And life on Earth does better in warm periods than in cold periods. That's why they've called these climate optimums when it's warmer. We should enjoy this optimum while it lasts, because every single other fluctuation in the past, it's gone warmer, colder, warmer, colder. And this whole idea that it's just going to go warmer, warmer, warmer forever, it's I would bet huge amounts of money it's not going to happen. They just keep up and down. It's up
but
and
they
down.
Also said if there is no ice on the poles, then we go to die, because then the reflection is not good, and the white has to reflect to the clouds and the seas, and then the whole things go in collapse.
Yeah, so that's a concept known as positive feedback, that a little warming, for other reasons, causes more and more warming. So the feedbacks are positive. So as it keeps warming, it just keeps warming faster and faster until the Earth becomes uninhabitable. But that's never happened in the past. The Earth has been around for over 4 billion years. It's never just continued straight up. There's enough stability in the climate, so it goes up for a while and it goes down for a while. It never just gets so hot that life on Earth perishes. It never happened yet. It's not going to happen. Yeah. And another thing they talk about is that if you look at the history of CO2 on the planet, for most of the last 500 million years, there's just been way more CO2 in the air than now.
Then it was very green.
It was very green. The animals were doing great.
Yeah, and then there was a lot of CO2.
Yeah, yeah. So, and we're panicking because there's too much CO2. But if you look at the graph, we're at a very near a low point of CO2. And if it goes down to maybe 180 parts per million, that is when life on Earth is in serious trouble. And right now, again, we're at maybe 425 or something. But in the past, when there was a lot of life around, it was thousands of CO2. It was just maybe a factor of 10 more than we have now. And as Will Happer says in the movie, we could burn all the hydrocarbon fuel that we can find, and we still can't get it up to 4,000 parts per million. There's not enough around to even do that.
So, but then we also can't live if you put it so low.
If we put it so low, we can't live, yeah.
That's also...
Yeah. Yeah, that's a way bigger problem. In general, cooling is a problem. Warming from here, not a problem. It's cooling we should fear. And I'm not afraid of it, but cooling would be way worse. The whole idea that we want temperatures to go back to where they were in 1850, it was a little cooler in 1850, we don't want that. And we don't want less CO2 in the air. One thing about the CO2 between 280 in maybe 1850 and 425 now, that additional CO2 has been great for crop growth. So CO2 isn't the climate control knob, but it really is good fertilizer for plants. It's plant food. Yeah. So we want more.
No, we want
CO2 is good.
It's good. It is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We love CO2.
T-shirts with we want CO2.
Yeah, you've seen those. I've seen them.
Yeah. There was also a woman in the documentary. I forgot her name.
Yeah, Sally Ballyunas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also a kind of sad story that she also, stepped back from her job.
Yeah. Yeah. All she wanted to do is she was doing great science and telling the truth, but she got so much flack and so much pushback. Both her and her family were suffering. So she just had to take early retirement. And it's just sad. I think... Yeah, scientists should be allowed, of course, to dig into everything and to say what they think, and nobody should be canceled. And I think that's going to go away, too. I do. Again, I'm optimistic.
Yeah, I'm happy that you're optimistic.
Yeah.
But in the bigger scheme, you said when there are, also in the past, if there are changes, then the human being becomes in panic, or they say it's the witches, they say it's...
Yep.
So it's also part of us.
It is part of us. And in the 70s, there were people that were very concerned because the Earth really did cool between the 1940s and 1970s. And there was reporting in the mainstream press saying, if this keeps continuing,
we freeze that.
Yeah, maybe. There was Leonard Nimoy did a special about that, about a looming ice age, and didn't happen. Right about when he did that, that's when it turned around and started warming again. Yeah. So up and down.
Yeah, up and down.
Yeah.
But is it also that we are so well organized now that we had that the group thinking is the same by you as here?
Mm-hmm.
Because we are so well organized that it now has an impact. So all the money goes that direction. All the push is going that direction. That it is a kind of... perhaps bigger than in the past, because we are so well organized.
That's a great point that I haven't thought about that much, but that's a great point that it is a global thing. You're hearing the same people saying the same thing around the whole world. And I think a lot of these hysterias that I was talking about maybe hundreds of years ago, they were localized. And like the tulip hysteria, I don't know if anybody cared on the other side of the world about that as much back then. But if it happened again, then they would care. Yeah, that's a great point.
Yeah, but you're optimistic. Yeah. So I want that you said, but still, I'm optimistic.
Well, I'm still optimistic because it can go the other way, too. A movie like this, or as we start talking about it, as more and more people start talking about it, it can go the other way. And globally, people can give up on this scam. So I don't think we have to fight it one local place at a time. I think the whole thing might crumble.
Okay, yeah, I want to be optimistic. Yeah. But also the other. Okay. Just to talk about myself, if I look to the sky and feel the wind, I have no clue.
Mm-hmm.
And in the past, there were a lot of people, if they just look to the sun, the clouds, especially farmers.
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
The wind, they have skills in their body.
I'm from a farmer. My dad's like that still to this day. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, the smell or... Mm-hmm. They have that keen eye to understand in the depth nature and tomorrow it goes to rain or it's or the sun will shine, or and because we are so in industrial environment or in the city environment, we have no skills. So they can't tell us everything.
Yeah, that's
we
a
are,
very...
we are hopeless.
Yeah, that's a great point too. But if there is a climate crisis, even ordinary people should notice it, right? If you go out there and you don't notice any climate crisis, maybe there isn't one,
no,
right?
But if it's in the newspaper.
Then there must be one. But I guess Patrick Moore talks about that again in his book, Fake Invisible Catastrophes, because as you go out, you can see there's no climate crisis where you are. But then they have to say, oh, you can't see it from where you are. But if you go to the Great Barrier Reef on the other side of the earth, that's where it is.
But your farmer dad, he said,
yes,
I don't believe you because I have the skills, but because we are so vulnerable for scams.
Yeah. You mentioned farmers. I think it's particularly hard to sell this scam to farmers, to old farmers. My dad's 95 now, and he's constantly saying, you know, this is a really cold spring, but in 65, boy, that was a cold spring.
They remember.
So they remember because he's out there all the time, and it made a big difference to him, whether it was cold and, how long the growing season, early frost. And he remembers the Dust Bowl. He was a little kid. He remembers the dust blowing through his farm and all that stuff. So, yeah, I think it's way easier to sell it to both young people.
City people.
Yeah, city people and young people, because this might be the first time they've really heard this. And as you get older and older, there's so many of these environmental scares and all sorts of scares. And one after another, you see them all fizzle away. So I think it's way harder to sell to more experienced people.
But we also had a period of acid rain.
Yes, yeah, that went away too, didn't it?
You had that also.
Yeah, we had that, but I haven't heard people, don't talk about it anymore. It just
went away. What was that?
I don't know what it was. I think it was a scare. Yeah. It was a scare that went completely away. It crumbled. I remember people talking about it all the time, maybe 89 or so. That was a big thing. But yeah, it's gone now. You don't hear much about the ozone hole anymore. All sorts of scares. They just keep coming and
where
going.
Where is that, the ozone hole?
I think it's natural. I think it's fluctuating naturally, I think. Yeah. Yeah.
But that is, I think if you read these books and look at it, then it's also be humble to nature. It's so complicated. It's kind of still magic.
It is still magic, yeah. Yep. And you can study it all you want and have this idea of what's going to happen in the next 10 years, and you're going to get fooled. It's going to make a fool of all of us, I think.
Yeah, but I think both of us are saying, okay, be good for the earth.
Yep.
Take care. That's something else. And we encourage that.
Yep, that's to totally fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we need to make smart decisions and don't let people scam us. Yeah.
No, and take people's job. And
And listen to both sides. Listen to everybody. Think for yourself. Yeah. It's very important. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Yeah, I enjoyed this.